Send me back home. I hate the zombie takeout world. What's up? Welcome to episode 416 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And I am Scotto.
And yeah, we're finally here. I wanted to call this episode Come Hell or High Water. Scott had a better title. Last week, on Tuesday of last week, my power went out thanks to Hurricane Isaias. Was it Isaias?
I didn't have to deal with it over here.
I saw
Chicago,
the spelling.
So.
I think it's pronounced Isaias. Anyway, yeah. Power was out for 50 hours. I prefer putting it that way because it sounds, or just shy of 50 hours, like 50 minutes shy. I prefer saying it that way because it sounds better than just over 2 days. That was an experience I never want to relive again.
I think I'd been through a couple outings about that long when I lived out there, at least.
I'd never gone more than a few hours until last week.
I think I remember Hurricane Gloria. We went out for like a couple days. Oh, yeah. And I think there was a 4th of July weekend for some reason at Seaside. We just were down for a couple days too.
But, you know, hurricanes are fairly normal. I live in Jersey, for anybody who's new, and fairly close to the shore. On the other hand, last week, or this week, on Monday,
I experienced something I've never experienced before. and I guess it's my rightful induction into Midwestern living, even though I've been here for like, what, 12, 13 yeah, years somewhere. Or something? 13 years, I think.
15, going on.
Yeah, probably something like close to 15.
End of 15 you moved. Or end of 5 you moved.
6, I think, actually. So I think.
No, you're right, end of 6.
I experienced a tornado. Although
in Chicago,
they have not confirmed that it was a tornado that hit here, but let me just tell you, we're getting ready to just like hang out in a room without windows cause we're hearing the sirens. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to like adjust the bed. It's one of those electronic things.
Right.
And as I'm adjusting it, I stop because I hear this really weird noise. It's like a train almost, as they say. It really is. Mm-hmm. And, everything just starts, blowing up against the window and you hear smashing and just breaking and the power goes out.
Oy.
And so when we took a walk around outside afterwards, the rest of the block is fine except for a stretch of 10 houses.
Oy.
Where there are just trees down everywhere.
I saw the photos.
And so to confirm that it was a tornado, because a lot of people are saying it wasn't confirmed, whatever, our neighbor has one of those basketball nets in his backyard. It was in the opposite direction from where the wind was coming, upside down on its fence.
Wow.
So it somehow got blown backwards from the direction the storm came in, which the only thing that would do that would be a tornado.
Yeah, yeah. And I know they're a thing in the Midwest, but you're in Chicago. I would think all of the big buildings would break the wind enough so they wouldn't happen.
We're in the city proper. There's a few neighborhoods over where they did confirm a tornado landed, touchdown. So it really wouldn't be that crazy if this was one too. I can't see what else it would be.
Well, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense.
The rush of a storm. Everything
given the damage,
the
it makes
direction.
Sense. I wouldn't think a tornado could hit in a city.
They've said that's been the biggest fear, is like a real like F5 would someday come and hit, because this is, you know, we do get the weather here.
I know it's notorious for snow, but you know, tornadoes hit where it's big and open and the wind has space to really build up. Doesn't really happen in the city.
My boss, who's like a neighborhood or two over, said he saw like a dust devil kind of thing.
Okay. Also,
while he was trying to get his stuff secured.
You know, this occurred to me, seeing the pictures and thinking back to the Kenny Dennis review, your neighborhood's a lot more suburban looking than I would have expected.
Oh, that's Chicago. It's very flat here. It's very,
But like separate
once you
buildings
get
and everything.
past the downtown area, it's all just like they did the Sears Roebuck houses. Like literally, they ordered them out of the Sears catalog, and there's so many two flats here. But there's also condos and stuff. It's a pretty big mix.
Oh, moving on. I do have a
Yes.
slight correction from last week. I credited the actor who played Garak on DS9 as Mark Robinson. He's actually Andrew Robinson. I kind of combined his name with Mark Olaimo, who played Dukat. I confused my Cardassians.
I think we were pretty damn exhausted last episode.
I also want to plug Memory Alpha. It's a Star Trek wiki. As I've been getting more and more into Trek, it's been invaluable to kind of look up lore and that's different aliens and such.
When I was getting into Discovery, the timeline is like, you really need to follow it because it's like, okay, so when did this happen and when did that happen? Because there's just so much now in the prequel world, at least.
I'm up to season four. It just keeps getting better. I think it's my favorite Trek series
Yeah.
now. Finally, moving on to this week, we have some listeners submitted. This is from Bodo on Twitter. He said, "Okay, Padawan inverted. Was I the only one waiting for people from the Z axis to save the day, because they had a better angle on everything?" 69. Enough said. Palkagoon. Okay, sure, and at least free. Minor thing about Padawan inverted. Kind of expected and a kiss, then to find out through the diary that they were brother and sister.
Ooh,
The whole Luke and Leia thing.
ew.
They didn't actually kiss, which we'll get to. I was very happy about that. But yeah, the whole Z-axis thing amused me, I will say that. Make it 3D. And that all brings us to this week's movies. Yes, I said movies. We have a Yasuhiro Yoshihara double feature. He's the same director. He directed both of these. He also directed Time of Eve, which we reviewed back in 2015. This week we have, from 2006, Palkicoon. It's a short film. And the feature from 2013, Padawan Inverted. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by Kenny Loggins, flying into the danger zone since 1986.
And also brought to you by the excavation department. Work on your own schedule, or not at all. All right, so we have obviously the world of the future, underground, industrial. Just who knows where these guys are. I keep thinking of Star Blazers, of course, because they lived in an underground lair.
It's been way too long for me to remember that.
Yeah, they were going to save the Earth while everybody was living underground. But here we have we don't really see many people of this world because we're following, well, I guess I want to say kids. I don't know how old they really
I
are.
would say 20 somethings.
20 somethings maybe. They're kids to me. they are working for the excavation department. They're uncovering things or downloading things from a database that I'm not sure where they're getting it from, but it's and as they progress, you figure out that it's from us, either 20th century or 21st century life. And then the more they progress, you realize we fucked everything up, and that's why they're there.
They say the archives we knew as history ended at some point.
Right, so the and hence the sponsor, the members of this excavation department, they just get so depressed by this that they drop out, or sometimes don't show up regularly, or sometimes they just decide they're not going to do this at all because they just don't want to know. And it's really brings up the debate of, is knowledge important? Or is it better to, be blissfully ignorant? And they give you, of course, a resounding, of course it's better to know, because it turns out that this is instructions left from the people that got them here, and what to do when everything gets better again, because there is still hope. And he finds out where they are, really, and hilarity ensues.
And I love the very beginning. It's this epic shot of this enormous staircase.
Now, my notes kind of suffered this week or last week or wherever the fuck we did this.
You last week, me today.
My notes suffered because I watched this not on a computer, but on a real, you know, television, okay, you know, widescreen. And boy, was I rewarded for that, for this. Because, I mean, the animation is just beautiful. Yeah. How much is digital? I'm sure you know.
I didn't really find that in my research, but I can tell looking a fair amount of it is 3D.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was probably all done on a computer. Very few, I will say, hand draw anymore. Miyazaki, okay, pretty much it. And maybe some people at Disney. Those are the ones who hand draw anymore. But there was a lot of CG in this. A lot of those 3D panning shots around the staircase were all 3D.
And it fits because it's just this industrial world, mm-hmm, you know, where they're just pretty much living in the trash compactor kind of thing.
Yeah. At one point, Riku, Uta, the male lead, describes it as an artificial concentration camp.
Yeah.
The catalyst for his discovery is this image he finds with sound. Up until this point, he'd only been finding photos and text documents. He finds a video, but it is seriously corrupted. Yeah. And when you see it at first, it's this jarring noise and this person who looks very distressed in the image. And it's just very jarring. It's as jarring to the viewer as it is to Yura.
I mean, it takes you back to, I mean, if you were online back in the early days, it is exactly what it was like. So mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I loved the shot of them. They're on these sort of people movers, which both movies had in common, people movers.
Yeah.
And they go through this electronic sign. You know, there's this, you know, sign saying, I don't forget what it was saying, but they actually physically move through it. It was all just a projection. It was very Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And at one point they say they're closing off the excavation department. Sounded very ominous. Yeah, you know, basically saying we don't want to know anymore.
Right. There's That was it. It was just too sad for them, mm-hmm, to understand the truth.
Yeah.
But the truth is really kind of a roadmap to get them the fuck out of there.
Right, right. And I like how they worked the exposition mostly into the dialogue with just a short bit of explanation.
Yeah.
And even the explanation was interesting because it was just a quick voiceover about, you know, how they used to live closer to the surface, but things got worse and worse, and they had to move further down to the life support equipment.
Right, and that, of course, you think, okay, so they're still, you know, they're on the planet still, you know, they're on Earth.
Mm-hmm. And I love how they mix these map overlays with I have real quote unquote real shots of pictures of the characters.
Yeah,
what would be photographs if it, you know. Filmed shots if it wasn't animation. It's just, you never quite know if you're seeing a map or, you know, reality, or the reality of the film anyway.
Yeah.
And the past is so obscured that they don't even know what a book or a library is.
Right. And you could see us heading in that direction anyway. I mean,
you gotta figure, given what happens at the end, they've have to have been up there for a few hundred years at least.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, I think there was somewhere that said the time, or am I thinking, okay, again, mixing up the two movies? No, I'm mixing up the two movies.
You're mixing up the two, because I do have a guess on Padme Inverted.
Yeah.
But no, there's no indication of how long it is, but do we want to just give it away? Because we decided we were going to spoil this one.
Yeah, this one's okay to spoil because, well, it's only like 20 minutes. Yeah. And two, you kind of figure it out.
It's Pale Cocoon. They're on the moon.
Yeah.
Because Earth was, as they put it, rusted. Overpopulation had just destroyed the Earth. And by the end of the movie, we find out they're on the moon, or they find out they're on the moon. And Earth has been restored. It has regrown. That had to have at least taken a few hundred, if not thousands of years.
Right. the pods at the bottom of the pool were alien eggs that were ready to hatch.
Right. that one took me a minute.
Rest in peace, Wilfred Brimley.
Yeah. So, you know, they were up there for several generations. So, you know,
yeah.
Assuming they went up, you know, even just a little after our time, we're mostly digital.
Right.
And books are kind of, you know, an artifact for us.
We're still going through our collection.
Mm-hmm. I did a purge some years ago.
I'm building shelves actually right now.
So I can easily see them, you know, this generation, let's say 1,000 years in the future, you know, on a moon where they never had physical books.
Right.
No having paper no clue what there. They are.
Although I guess you could 3D print paper.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, think about that statement. You can print the paper.
Yeah. There's going to be some way.
There's got to be how it goes, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, there's got to be some artificial paper. There's got to be, you know, some that doesn't require trees. I'm sure someone's working on something. I loved the shot of Rico, the female lead, laying on the stairs.
Oh, yeah.
The other main character, Rico, she spends most of the movie laying down on this giant flight of stairs. She explains why later, and it is just chilling.
Yeah.
She explains that her grandmother, who had lived much closer to the surface, fell from the stairs and ended up living down there.
And again, just the animation, those little things floating down.
Yeah, little particles in the air, which we get in both movies.
Yeah,
and floating in different directions. But I'm gonna shock you again. This is gonna be another "What have you done with John?" moment. But I liked the montage. There's a montage of Udo and of Udo going through the archive and trying to restore this video. And Rico just laying on the stairs in different positions with music playing over. I liked it. It established that, you know, time had passed, work had to be done, which is the whole point of a montage, but this one worked.
Well, now I'm convinced the tornado has taken me to a different universe. Uh-huh. It's weird. Everything's in color now, too. Huh.
I loved Rico's line, I don't want to lose any more hope in reality. When she was trying to basically tell Udo to stop working on the archive.
Which is a crazy statement because you're facing away from reality.
Right.
I don't want to know more, so right. I don't want to lose my faith in something that I don't want to know about. It means you've already lost faith in it, of course.
Right, of course. And then the video clip he found turns out to be a music video.
Yeah, that's like the only downside to this, probably.
But it kind of works, because we get the music video as he's starting to kind of investigate. It's kind of juxtaposed with him investigating and kind of starting to, you know, go toward the surface to see what's really there. And we see Rico walking in while it's playing. He walks out on the video to go exploring. She walks in, and they kind of see it both at the same time. As he's making his way, he has to force his way up this elevator shaft, riding on top of an elevator.
It'd be much easier to do that in the next movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Loved the shot of the shuttle engines.
Oh, yeah.
As he gets to the top, you have these windows, and you see these space shuttle engines in the clouds.
Very just, psychedelic, very moody blues, question of balance.
And we see that the video, as they both realize where they are, the video is saying, talking about how comfortable and idyllic it is on this colony near the Sea of Tranquility. And, you know, we get that juxtaposed with, you know, these shots of, as he put it, the artificial concentration camp, this very, very Brazil-like world.
Oh, yeah.
And then at the end, we finally see the big kicker. The video shows Earth rusted, and then Udo looks up and sees Earth is back.
I mean, it ticked me off a little bit because you've got those people out there that are like, we don't need to worry about the environment. We'll just go and hang on Mars for, a bit. It's like, that ain't gonna fucking happen, man. Don't encourage them.
Well, I mean, theoretically, it would by it would grow back. You could, it could restore itself. It would just take a long fucking time.
Oh, of course. Right. It is possible that the world will grow back without humans interfering in it. However, humans living on another planet,
Oh, yeah. Not the best option. Do we want to do brains individually or both together?
Yeah.
Individually?
We might as well do our brains right now.
I'm giving this one a four. I really like it. I've seen it before. It's very different when you know the answer, the ending.
I'm right there with you with the four on this one. It's just visually beautiful, a bit slow, but I mean, it does get you thinking at least. It's kind of a crazy thing to watch, of course, during this time. It's kind of in that category with the lighthouse. Like, what movies should you not watch if you're not around people anymore?
I thought we were going to split on this one. From some of the stuff you were saying earlier.
Oh, I just saying it wasn't a good Wilford Brimley tribute.
All right, now on to Padma Inverted. This is again
Maybe
from
it was a good
2013.
Steve Guttenberg tribute.
Oh God. I forgot he was in that. I only remember him from the Police Academy movies.
Rest in peace, Steve Guttenberg's career. Actually,
Okay.
he was just on Last Week Tonight. They hired
Oh
him to
wow.
do the cameos
Nice.
to for their issues or whatever. I don't know. It was
Impromptu
weird.
plot summary for Padma?
Ah, yes, a second impromptu plot summary.
With only the one set of sponsors.
Yes, yeah. Alas, could not get the cash from an extra set of sponsors for some reason.
And in reality, I had to borrow one of Scott's sponsors because I hadn't come up with one.
I've got to hit the sales department as to see why they're not selling all our ad spaces. This is bullshit. But anyway, so we have this. We begin with, and this one's a lot more actually impromptu because since I had a dry run at the first one after our system crashed.
Everything before I announced the titles of the movies was recorded separately, but we were having connection issues.
Yeah, but anyway, we begin with a shot, pretty much of, well, I guess it looks like pretty close to right now, but we then see, we hear like some voices over a radio, but then all of a sudden,
Video goes a little glitchy.
everything starts going glitchy, and it looks like things are just being shot up into the air, and then it goes out. Next thing we know, we are in an underground. This one much more like the Star Blazers, Earth, where they were living underground. There's a danger zone that this girl is forbidden to go to, and it's guarded by what they call the Batmen. And well, of course, since she's a young girl, she wants to see what's out there. So she goes exploring, and she meets one of the Batmen, who are just dudes that are effortlessly standing up on the ceiling. And
Well, she doesn't meet him in that way. She sees him and runs away, or tries to
that's
get
right.
away.
Yeah, she encounters him and tries to get away, escape. And I mean, she's on the floor, he's on the ceiling, so they never really meet. But and she overcomes this obstacle later, but we'll get to that. And then it really goes sideways from here.
She falls off the edge of a catwalk and
She falls up.
no, she for her from her perspective falls down.
That's right. That's right. She falls down, and then she gets caught on the fence, at the top of the fence, but hanging upside down from the fence,
Emerges
which.
from a drain. And then she's in a tree, and then it gets weird. She starts falling up.
Yes, she starts falling up. I had to rewind to be like, wait, what the fuck? I thought she fell. Wait, what?
I gave you no warning for these movies.
So she's upside down, and she meets a young man who helps keep her tethered to the earth, brings her into a building so she can at least stay on the ceiling.
He keeps her grounded both literally and physically.
Yes,
figuratively very much and so. Physically. Anyway.
So the mystery is there's this whole society that lives in this other world oriented in a different direction with a different center of gravity, and her society is only, well, I guess it was just kind of a legend. There were whispers of it.
Yeah.
They completely forgot these people were there. There's a bit of a dick. a real dick.
A totalitarian despot.
Kind of probably, you know, I mean, literally steepling of the fingers and like, you know,
yeah.
A combination between Mr. Smithers and the guy from the Iron Chef,
who is out to exterminate the inverted, the people who live underground. Basically, for the people underground, gravity goes one way. For the people on top side, the gravity goes the other way.
Oh, and you know what? I said the bass in a Diana Ross song. This is very much influenced, I think, by a Peter Gabriel song called Downside Up.
Okay, that would work even better.
Where they are, where it is about like the sky people and the earth people.
Okay.
And yeah, so he was very much influenced by this. And when he performed it live, they had gravity boots, and his daughter, and they were upside down singing.
Nice.
From like this big scaffolding up over the stage. But anyway, so the Padma, the girl
from the underground, and Eiji, the boy from topside.
They both have their long lost idols, who they are both pining for. Mm-hmm. Eiji, his father, who died in sort of an experiment, and Padma, her older brother?
I think just an older guy she was friends with. It was weird. I was waiting for it to be her father. They never went there.
No, you knew it wasn't her father. But you know, it was just kind of a hero of hers.
Yeah.
And it turns out the two of them worked together. And it also turns out that the dictator has killed both of them.
And I say balloon. It wasn't really a balloon, but it was a flying machine.
Yeah. Or an upside down
machine. Or a falling machine, depending
on your point of view.
Yeah.
So, and this guy was, this dictator was a real idiot because he, as my notes say, what dumbass implicating yourself in his father's murder while trying to get him to conform.
Yeah.
And, of course, that led to him rebelling even more once he figured out that, wait a minute, it wasn't an accident that killed my father. It was this asshole.
I'm going to be you for a second. He really put the K in dictator.
Mm-hmm. He really put the K in dictator. I think Wilford Brimley would be proud of that joke.
Anyway, he captures Padma and... AG breaks her out.
Oh, and all right, so they wind up going, well, but wait, we didn't get to Padma being kidnapped, did we?
Okay, I was just jumping ahead maybe a little bit to speed things up.
Yes, Padma gets kidnapped. AG winds up going down underground to get. He gets some help.
Yeah, from a friend of hers, Porta, who has a thing for her.
Yeah. And they also figure out that this tower that the dictator lives in is pretty much connected to the underground world because...
The shaft she fell down is the basement of the tower.
Right. At one point, the two societies were actually in communication with one another. and which is kind of important for the end. So they both come back and do a daring zero gravity rescue. Some of the most intense chase scenes you're ever going to see, which normally I find a chase scene boring. These are when you take gravity and twist it like this, literally twist it. It becomes a lot more intense.
They could have made a great physics game out of this movie.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about the physics. I mean, I imagine that's it's accurate, but
Well, the actual physics of the gravity thing, I don't think is, but
well, the question is, what if there are two centers of gravity?
right.
That's the big question. What happens if there is a center of gravity for something else? And for a different object.
I normally would nitpick physics, science in movies, but I would need a degree to nitpick this one on any kind of decent level.
Right. I feel like we should contact Neil deGrasse Tyson and ask him what he thinks of this. Like, is it possible for two different gravitational pulls for different objects? I don't know. I mean, it could be. I don't know. I don't have that
So
kind of
the
degree.
rescue happens.
The rescue happens, and well, of course, I think they just leave, right? That's right. They just fucking
They
leave. They
run
fly off.
away off the top of the building and fall upward,
Yes, they keep falling upward
grabbing
to
onto each
climb.
other. She weighs, I guess her gravity is slightly, yeah, because she's got a weight on her foot that they were using to keep her there. She weighs a bit more than he does at that point, so they go upward.
Right, he just says fuck it and goes upward. They come into a scaffolding though, and you see like different, I thought they were going to explain this a little more, but you see in different places where things are kind of coordinates, like there's a letter and a number in
Yeah,
different
section
places,
E3 or something like that.
right? And there's like, I mean, different places they're in. When they go up to the scaffolding, this is when I kind of figured things out. When I saw like the letter and number up there, it's like, wait a minute. This is all one big fuck up, isn't And well, they come back for vengeance, and I guess I could say hilarity ensues from
And
there.
lots of mind fucking happens.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the whole thing, like as soon as she falls up, you're just
If
like,
you
wait.
have any equilibrium issues, this is maybe not the movie for you.
Yeah, normally chase scenes bore the fuck out of me because you know exactly how the chase scene's going to end. Nor most of the movies, but this, when you have the gravity in the equation, it's just like, ah, my palms are getting sweaty.
I'm a little bit afraid of heights, and there were some perspective shots that were wow.
Yeah, you're just kind of like, wait, what?
But I like how they very briefly show what happened right at the beginning. They get that experiment out of the way.
Well, right, and they don't explain what it is, so it's just like something got fucked up.
But they don't leave that as the big mystery. Also, we were talking about the animation last time. I love how detailed the backgrounds are, particularly in the underground.
Right, I think it works better on the indoor stuff. I mean, it's not quite as breathtaking as the first one, but I think that's tougher to do in a full feature
And
movie.
artificial stuff's always easier to draw than organic stuff.
Yeah, it really fitted for that movie though, the CG, because it was just this industrial machine that they were all a part of, whereas this was organic.
And I love how the art style changes when she's alone and you see these dark, gritty exterior, background shots of these underground tunnels. And then she's with her family and with the other people underground. And it's all bright and very simplistic and all kind of, very classic cartoony.
Yeah.
It's a great mood shift. And it took me a while. They flash back to the last time she talked to Lagos, her idol. And it took me a minute to realize it was a flashback because the transition was just so smooth.
Yeah, they did some. I'm trying to remember the device they used
They
to
showed her
convey
laying
that it
in a
was a
bed,
flashback.
and you just her costuming changes, her wardrobe changes.
She gets younger,
I didn't even
also.
notice she got younger. She was just wearing
Yeah.
something different. I thought it was just a quick time of day change, but it was actually a flashback. And then you see that the topside world is actually tracking the people from the underground, referring to them as Sakasama beings.
Right, and they had this weird relationship where they just forgotten about each other somehow. Although the I can't remember the dictator's name.
I don't Ishimura, I think.
Yeah, I think it was Ishimura. How he wasn't quite sure that they existed until Padma came along. Yet
Until one
he
of the
had
Batmen saw
talked.
Padma.
Right. Until then, he wasn't quite sure if Lagos was real or not, you know?
And I love the design of the Batman.
Yeah.
It's like old school, like Vertigo comics, kind of the stuff League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was messing with. That a little bit of like Night Owl from Watchmen. It's that kind of design. These big
I
goggles.
was kind of thinking of Pink Floyd's The Wall,
Yeah.
where.
You mentioned Floyd there. A lot of the shots of the kids on the People Movers and how, rigidly lined up they are reminded me
Oh,
of Floyd.
yeah. Yeah, I mean, when he just. Yeah, one of the best moments in this is when he is leaving Padma to go back to school and he steps on that People Mover. And just that dead stare in his eyes that changes over. That was just oof. You knew exactly what you were in for, what kind of world it was they lived in at that moment. It summed it all up.
But I just love the mind fuck of her. She falls down a path, down a mine sh down a shaft, and then falls up across a fence.
Right. I sort of had to rewind. Like, wait a minute, what just happens?
And it gets a little confusing what will obey which gravity. I think the people are what, or anything that was there when it happened, will obey the different kinds of gravity. Because she has a
Right.
photo of the top of topside that obeys topside gravity.
Yeah, it's. Their keepsake she has that of course go up the ceiling.
Right. And the dust observes topside gravity. We referenced that before. I love the rotating shot when she first pulls Eiji off the ground. Because when they fir she first encounters him, she's holding onto a fence. It takes her hands to kind of, pull her down or keep her tethered. And she's got a backpack on. And the backpack is just enough extra weight to lift him up. And there's this
And
rotating shot that is just, well, stomach churning if you have issues with heights.
at first you're kind of like, what the fuck? Why is he reacting so much weird like this to flying rather than just like, what the fuck? It's more of a, my God, I'm flying sort of thing where he just can't believe it. But it's they explain later about his father's obsession with flight. And so this was a great honor for him to follow into his father's
Well, there's
footsteps.
that, and there's also the inverted were not only thought of as a myth, but they were demonized.
Yeah.
Both sides were taught to hate the other. And they explain that very subtly at first. With just a couple of lines to each other, he takes her to this shed where she hides out for a while. And there are some lines to each other that kind of establish that they don't trust each other's people.
Well, the bottom people, the people underground, they I don't know if there's as much of a hate for them
Well, no, they don't seem,
from them.
they're more afraid of the
Well, yeah,
topsiders.
it's more of just stay away from those people.
Right. The topsiders are taught to hate the inverted. And then, as they're in the shed, I think it was as he was going back to class, you get this hit of romantic music. And I loved the moment when, you know, they're kind of parting and she says something and the music just stops dead.
Yeah.
And it picks up again and she says something else and it stops dead. She was interrupting the score. I loved that part.
Well, right, because I think she wanted like some food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he was going back to class and she was like, oh, you know, please don't leave me, please don't leave me. And I love how this movie kind of plays with the romantic subplot but never actually goes there.
I mean, you went there enough. You knew the two of them were pretty much destined to be together.
It never makes it explicit. You could read it either way. We'll get to that in the later scene, but it's never explicit, which I love. You could read it romantically, and that's valid. You could also, like me, choose to not read it romantically, and that's still valid. They walked that line.
I mean, they were on top of each other enough.
Well, they didn't kiss. They didn't exchange I love yous. So, you know. But back to the earlier in the film. Loved the music that kicked in when he goes back to school and you see how rigid that life is.
Yeah.
They live strictly by rules.
Again, we're Pink Floyd.
Very Pink Floyd. And the indoctrination video they were shown was just fucking terrifying.
Yes.
You have the dictator telling them basically how evil the inverted are. And this was the second time I've seen the film, and it's a very different experience the second time you see it.
Yeah, because you know where it's going.
Yeah. And second time around, I can see the need for them being so strict, but it still seems wrong.
Well, right.
Because
considering
he's actually turning it into kind of a religious thing. He says it's a sin to fall into the sky.
Oh, yeah. It's a sin to explore. It's a sin to question anything. You know, it's a sin tying into the first one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sin to learn about who you really are.
Right. And normally when you have a film, and this happens a lot in anime, where you have, you know, teenagers as the leads, it can be a little twee.
It works
in this case because they need to be kids because they haven't been indoctrinated and they don't know what happened yet.
Right. And there's this sense of, I could find out what's going on. Right. You know,
it works in this case. They also show a brief shot of some prisoner from the underground it took me a minute to figure out was August.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure, but I was kind of like, is that, you know, because they never show his face.
Right, until the end, until they show him to Panama.
Yeah.
And it took me a minute to kind of figure out how long ago the accident happened. I think I worked it out. Because they show the birth years of both AG and Panama. It's MG41. I'm guessing MG is, you know, when the accident happened.
Oh.
I'm kind of assuming that's when their calendar would start. And assuming they're both about 16, it would be just shy of 60 years since it happened.
Okay.
Which would mean that some were old, you know, the old guy in Padma's bunker was alive for it.
Oh. See, I thought he was kind of like the second, you know, I mean, he's kind of like the second one to take over, I think.
Yeah, he was the chief had passed recently.
Yeah, so, but you're right. Maybe he was young enough when it did happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was around for it. I don't think anybody else we saw in the film would have been around for it.
Yeah.
AG's father, maybe, but he isn't alive in the film. I also loved the shot of AG walking past his classmates when they were on the People Mover, just after we saw what was being done to Padma after she was, you know, kidnapped.
Yeah.
It just kind of, it was such a great metaphor. He was off of, the veil had been lifted.
Yeah.
You know, he was off of the track. Also love the underground, how the underground was flipped when AG went down. We saw it from his perspective. This movie does brilliant things with perspective.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've never seen a movie do what they've done with perspective here.
And again, we get a great video game. I think this is where the video game is. What AG and Porta breaking into the tower to rescue Padma. That's
So
the
there was a
video
video
game.
game?
Because it's a total physics game.
True.
Whose weight are you using?
You have
And the
to
bed
have the
that
right
Padma was in.
balance of weight.
They find Padma. She's in a bed on the ceiling and this domed glass ceiling in the tower. And they show her kind of getting, kind of sitting on the edge of the bed from her perspective, looking down into the sky.
They show
Absolutely
her,
terrifying.
it was about, reliance upon him.
Loved the twist with this when they get up to when they find the flying machine. That just messes with your head. And again, I turned into you in my notes. His dad's flying machine. Falling machine is more like it.
Well, sometimes it takes. Really, flying is just
You're f missing the ground.
missing the ground. Yeah, Douglas Adams, miss him.
Marion calls a song with a similar line.
Yeah.
And once again, I liked a montage. They show a montage of AG's father and Lagos building the flying machine. And it's not just a montage of, getting things done, to quote the song. It's backstory.
You gotta have a
That
mentish.
was useful to fill things in.
It was them getting stuff done. They were building the machine.
Yeah, but it wasn't like in the course of the movie montage. It was a backstory montage, which was interesting. And okay, so they're up in the ceiling after they found the flying machine, and she's right above him because their gravities are still opposite.
Yeah.
Talking about how they're going to get back down and reveal everything and tell everybody what's going on. They're holding hands, their head foreheads are touching. It's a close, affectionate moment, but I don't necessarily see it as romantic. And Bodo mentioned a kiss. I watched it three times. They pull out before there's a kiss.
I thought there was a kiss
There
too
was
there,
no
actually.
kiss. I watched that scene specifically to make sure their foreheads were touching, they were holding hands. It was very affectionate, but it was nothing necessarily romantic. And I love that because you could read it as romantic if you chose to, but you could also read it as platonic. Love how they walked that line. Because I was prepared to dock at a half a brain if there was a romantic subplot.
Ah, with the proximity and stuff, you could understand.
And also, okay, when they finally get the ship down, or the flying machine down, and they realize they need to jump from the machine to survive, because
Yeah.
Ishimura shows up with his men, and they've got the net gun, basically a bazooka that fires a net that they use to capture inverted. So they do
It's pretty much taken straight from Total Recall.
kind of, so they fire the net at them. It hits them. They end up over the danger zone. I love how the net just falls off. Like, try again. And then we get to the ending, which we're not going to spoil.
No.
But wow, the gravity got interesting.
Yeah, damn.
It flips a few times. It's hard to keep track of which way is up, or
Oh.
which way should be up for who, for which character.
Right. It was a lot of hanging, a lot of Buster Crab kind of.
Love the trees growing out of the ruined buildings though.
Yeah.
And when there's like a waterfall coming out of a building in one shot, loved that. Again, connects with Pal Ki-Koon in a lot of ways, which is why I put these two together. Same director and similar themes. Earth had been reclaiming itself. And loved the waterfall coming out of the building. On to sequels and remakes, because I've got ideas for both. I would love to see a full feature that starts with Pal Ki-Koon and then shows the aftermath.
Oh.
You know, they find out they're on the moon, and now they're telling everybody, and what, you know, obviously there's going to be a backlash, and the government's going to want to shut it down. And how the fuck does Uhura get off of that elevator cart?
I think they just were happy to go back home, though. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's a backlash or not. If they just,
I don't. Although, I think there might be an invest. You know, the powers that be might have an investment in keeping him in the moon. I mean, if you're putting a story there, there's got to be a conflict. You know.
Yeah.
You can obviously headcanon it and say they revealed everything and everything was great and they went back to Earth and reestablished, which is good.
The conflict would be: are there enough people that can fit in the rocket to go back?
And how was the space station suspended in those clouds, or space shuttle suspended in those clouds? And with Padma, I want a prequel. I want the accident and the aftermath and how both societies got established.
I don't know. I think they summed that up well enough here, though. I mean, they really do go over the backstory a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to, I want to see it played out, see how it all went. Because there had to be a lot of working that out and a lot of conflict and a lot of drama associated with it.
Would either of these work as live action, though?
I think Pale Cocoon needs to be anime. Needs to be animated. I don't think it works live action.
I mean, it's, you know, what they're doing live. When I say live action these days, of course, lot of it's animated anyway.
Half CG. I just
I never understood that the Lion King live action. It's like, but it's just all CGI, dude.
But I think Pale Cocoon works better in animation. You can set the mood better.
Yeah.
Than you can in live action. I would love to see a live action Padma, but the effects budget would be insane.
The effects budget would be insane, and it'd be terrifying, actually.
Yeah, that's true. Some of those shots in animation messed with my fear of heights. I don't want to see that live action, you're right.
You imagine seeing that in a fucking IMAX?
Yeah,
Holy shit.
No. On to brains.
On to brains.
I loved it, I went 5.
I'm going 5 as well. Ishimura was a bit cartoony, but the rest of it really does hold up, and some of the best chase scenes I've seen in a long time.
Just maybe if you've got any equilibrium issues or a real bad fear of heights, pass on it. So what have we learned?
According to Pale Cocoon, the future will have just as shitty Wi-Fi as we do in the present.
And I learned to never trust the government. All right, that's it for Pale Cocoon and Padma Inverted. Until next time, when we'll be reviewing Life Force, our Mandela Effect movie. We both remember reviewing this one years ago, but it's not on the list.
I could have sworn we did this. Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe we've just seen it enough times to feel like we've reviewed it, and we've probably talked about it plenty of times. We've never reviewed it.
Yeah.
We're finally going to review it. Of course, until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life. There you are.
There you are.